I not once with a pediatrician or OB was ever sort of warned, this happens to nearly every mother, it could happen. I mean, no one ever told me.
I would constantly be filled with fear and worry. I feel like whenever someone asks me a question like, oh, what it's like being a mom, I say, I just worry all the time.
You are listening to Stream, the South African Mental Health and Business Podcast, where we have conversations about navigating through struggles, achieving success, and people's secrets to reaching optimal performance.
In today's episode, I'm joined by one of my nearest and dearest friends, Nicole Lupton, who also happens to be my business partner for the past 6 years for our online fitness, beauty, and health platform called Wellness in the City. Nicole is a mom of two, and having witnessed how this mom operates juggling many roles while single parenting 5 nights a week is so unbelievably inspiring and a little bit alarming because I genuinely don't know how she does it all. Now, I'm sure you know a mom just like this. In fact, you might just be that mom. In either case, I know you're going to find so much value from today's episode. Nicole and I chat to registered counselor Sharman Reddington, the founder of Mumwell, who offers online therapy for expectant and postpartum mums. I really hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. This episode is brought to you by Habitas Namibia, the experience-led sustainable luxury hotel situated on a private estate only 45 minutes from Windhoek International Airport. So if you're looking for a truly unique wildlife experience and yearning for an opportunity to disconnect, to reconnect, then I highly recommend you visit habitasnamibia.com to take advantage of the special rate they are offering South Africans. But don't expect your run-of-the-mill safari experience, as this property boasts a wealth of distinctive programming in line with their ethos, such as game drives complemented with a lesson in medicinal plants, indigenous spa treatments, sunrise yoga, and a unique bush braai experience under the stars with local live music and dance. Visit habitasnamibia.com for more information.
Okay, so today we're going to be chatting about intrusive thoughts as well as transitioning from one kid to two or three or even more, which seems to be a trend. Yeah, we'll get to that.
Trending at the moment.
Yeah, I was chatting to Sharman. I feel like so many people are having like more than two kids now. Three or four.
It's like they're going back to like our parents' generation, you know, when like three was like the cool number.
I feel that's quite popular. But now, okay, so intrusive thoughts. The topic is very intriguing. For me, it sounds very dangerous.
And dark.
And dark and deep. All the kinds of things I love, I'm very curious about. So as a non-mom, like I feel like I've also got intrusive thoughts. So maybe you can explain a bit further as to what it exactly is.
Yeah, so I think you like hit the nail on the head with it sounds dark and scary and overwhelming. And I think that's why so many of us don't know about intrusive thoughts is because it seems too scary to not only think, but then to admit I'm thinking. Simply put, an intrusive thought is going to be a thought that's unexpected, unwanted, and it seemingly pops up out of nowhere. And often with new moms, that thought seems to be centered around harm coming to baby. So those thoughts could be something like, what if my baby falls down the stairs? What if baby is in bed and falls between the mattress and the wall? And they can really be quite out of the ordinary and really disturbing and shocking when they pop up into your mind with seemingly no warning. So yeah, that's sort of a definition of what an intrusive thought would be.
Experienced?
Yeah, Sharman, also I wanted to ask you because I saw that like write up, that beautiful poem that I think it's Jessica Ulrich, that she did I mean, she writes so beautifully. She's got so many different things and elements that she touches on, and one of which was intrusive thought. And that's where I was like, oh, that's me. That's what I go through. But then when I Googled intrusive thoughts, it came up and said, like, it's when you think of harming your child. So then I was like, oh, no, that's not me. Like, I'm always constantly worried that some harm is going to come to my child, and not that I'm going to do something. And I know that also that is all, like, you know, intertwined with postnatal depression and all of that. And that thought of harming your child, or, you know, putting the pillow over your child, or what if I dunk her underneath the water? Or there's so many of these, like, crazy, scary thoughts that come into your head. But the thing is that, like, for me, I never felt that. It was more harm that was going to happen to them, or something that was going to hurt, or it wasn't necessarily me harming the child. But is it the same thing?
So I think, yeah, a great question. And it sort of touches on so much more about perinatal sort of mental health and psychological disorders. And we could probably spend hours just unpacking that. If we look at intrusive thoughts on their own, so this isn't postnatal, perinatal, depression, anxiety, we're just looking at the thought. And then that thought being, it could be anything. It doesn't have to be harm. Sometimes, and Marisa, I don't know if you put in a trigger warning, but this can be a topic that can feel very uncomfortable. But sometimes those intrusive thoughts could even be sexual. It could be something around harm to yourself while you're holding your baby. It could be baby, and it could be harming baby. So the intrusive thought sort of category includes any of those unwanted, unexpected, and really uncomfortable, disturbing thoughts that pop up. On their own, 70 to 100% of new moms are going to experience those thoughts. So that's nearly all of us. Most of the time, those thoughts are without a psychological diagnosis. So they're just the thoughts, which are at 70 to 100%, nearly all of us are going to have those thoughts. And they're not always going to be sort of harm to baby. And for the most part, they're just thoughts. And that's not to minimize them, because they're fucking scary when they come up. Yeah. So it's not to minimize the thoughts, but that they are just thoughts. So the likelihood, there's some really interesting stats on this that I don't have offhand, but the likelihood of acting on a thought is so, so minute. It happens for sure, but for the most, those thoughts are exactly that, just thoughts. So they're not necessarily you're going to harm baby, but they're really normal, uncomfortable part of motherhood. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, so there are like variations of intrusive thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, all different types.
And this can start quite early on, I suppose. I remember, Nix, you were telling me with Isla when you were still pregnant, all the the nightmares you were having of what could go wrong. Would that also classify, as starting stages of intrusive thoughts?
I didn't even actually think of that, because there was that one stage where I had like a vivid dream that it was a girl, first of all, because I didn't know what I was having. And then they showed me on like the ultrasound in my dream, they showed me, oh yes, it's a girl. Oh, and she's not alive. I'm sorry, but she's not alive. And going through that, and then waking up and being in complete like hysteria, like, oh my gosh, like she's not alive, Phil. And then he's like, what, like, you know, and it's just, but the thing is that for me, I always pushed it away, because I'm such a sensitive person, I'm very emotional. So I always just thought, oh, you know, Nicole, don't be silly, you're over exaggerating, it's all in your head, like, get over it. you just, you know, oversensitive. But I would constantly be like filled with fear and worry. I feel like whenever someone asks me a question like, oh, what it's like being a mom, I say, I just worry all the time. I'm constantly worrying. And for a person who is naturally, I worry a lot. And then that on top of it, it's almost like debilitating. I feel like, geez, this is like so hardcore. Like it's in a normal, happy situation where the kids are running around, they're playing, I've got a drink in my hand, I'm so happy, until then bam, something, oh my God, he's going to fall off there and he's going to fall over the balcony, he's going to crack his head open, he's going to die. Like literally thoughts like that come into my mind. And then I'm like, okay, Nicole, just calm down. Thank goodness it doesn't like get to a point where I can't think of something else. I can actually just get out of it and stop myself and move on, but it's continuous. So since I was pregnant, thanks for the reminder, because I thought it was actually only after I gave birth, but all the way through there's constant, like I'm just worried all the time. And these thoughts, these hardcore, drastic, almost like not unrealistic, but
almost far-fetched.
Yeah. What's that word? I was thinking
extreme.
Of, yeah. Like it's not going to happen, but you foresee it and you constantly have these negative thoughts. And I feel like I'm just manifesting this whole negativity and like constantly thinking, oh no, that's going to happen, that, you know, don't do that. And it's tiring. It's exhausting. I don't know what my point of was telling you that.
I feel like a little bit of anxiety. I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't have kids yet.
And I am an anxious person. And so on top of that, I feel like...
But were you that anxious pre-kids? I'm trying to think. I don't know.
No, but I just almost like...
Because it's your caring, loving nature that takes over.
I think that like just having kids, it's on another level. Like I always thought like... Oh, you know, I'm like, I care for my friends and I care for my family and all of that. But then when you have kids, it's like a different, like you prioritize, your priorities are so different. And these things are like your whole life.
And they're fragile and they can't look after themselves yet. I suppose it will never end, because as they go through the different stages, you worry about different things.
Exactly. And friends who have got like, you know, older kids, they say to me, because I keep asking people about it, like, am I normal? Is this like normal for me to feel like this? And they're like, totally normal, but there is a point where it isn't normal. So Sharman, I don't know if you can help us out there.
Can you diagnose Nicole today?
It made me think as you were speaking, Nix, about that quote. I'm probably going to butcher the hell out of it, but something around, once you become a parent for the rest of your life, your heart walks outside your body. And I think that for me, just, you know, as soon as that baby is earthside, you are going to worry. I mean, that's sort of your most prized joy, you know. So I think naturally I'm yet to meet a mom that doesn't experience some anxiety around the health and well-being of her children. And yeah, sure, it reminds me. So I don't think, but maybe it just feels a bit too far away. I don't think I had really intrusive thoughts with my first, but I remember vividly holding my second in a, you know, really good mind space. There was nothing sort of untoward I was experiencing emotionally. And I was standing outside with him, sort of at a balcony. It wasn't like Michael Jackson blanket kind of balcony situation. And he was perfectly safe. And I just thought, like, what if he fell? What if he fell? And I remember like this sort of disbelief that I even thought it. And it was almost like a, oh, how dare you think that? You know? And I think that's also a thing that many who experience these intrusive thoughts in early motherhood, the first thought is, oh, why did I think that? Like, that's terrible. Shake it out my head. And that's, you know, that's what they are. When we say they're intrusive, is they come in and they're ugly and they shock the heck out of us. And I think, you know, they're, as much as they're normal, we, and I say we, sort of, I've experienced it, and I think many others feel, if we admit them, does that mean we're unstable? If we admit them, does it mean we're not capable of looking after our children? If we admit them, does it mean that, you know, there's this sort of unconscious message, or, you know, like an unconscious desire, a hidden message by those thoughts? Yes. No, absolutely not. But I do think there's an issue with the fact that we're not talking about them. I don't know about you, Nix, but I, not once with a pediatrician or OB, was ever sort of warned, this happens to nearly every mother, it could happen. I mean, no one ever told me.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I spent like the last 2 years, nearly 3 years, kind of like self-diagnosing myself, going like, why are you so, what is wrong with you? And then I actually chatted to a friend of mine who I told him about it, like, and I was like, I don't know what's wrong with me. And he was like, his sister-in-law had that, where she actually went for therapy because she was really struggling with it, and it was so bad that it was debilitating. She wouldn't leave the house because she was so scared that something was going to happen to her child, you know. Or so then I was like, okay, well, phone her and ask her what it is, if there's such a word for it, or do I need to go for therapy, do I need help understanding this? And then he was like, okay, I'll she lives in Australia, but he was like, yeah, okay, I'll get in touch. And then he never did. And then when I saw that write-up that Jessica did, that poet, I was like, oh my gosh, that's me. I like, and then when I messaged you and I said, like, hello, and then I put two and two together, I'm like, this is actually a real thing. And I got like excited about it, because I was like, okay, I'm not the only crazy one. Yeah.
In this world, you never are.
But now I know, like, there are various like degrees of intrusive thoughts, where either you know, like you say, you want to do harm to your baby, or, well, not want to, but like you think of doing, or that you just constantly worry that something harmful is going to happen to yours. And it was interesting for me to like look that up and find out that, you know, some of it is linked to postnatal depression. And it's sad for me, because I think if people are feeling like this and having thoughts like this, why is no one talking about it? How come it took me 3 years to actually learn about it and know that there's actually a word for it, like that it's not just in my imagination, you know, and it's not because I'm oversensitive and emotional and all the rest of it. It's actually a thing.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And it is sad, I think, is a great word, and definitely an emotion that I sit with thinking about the lack of sort of maternal mental health awareness, and how little we're informed about as new moms, and how little then we discuss with other moms. And I think, sort of, to go back on the example with the mom in Australia, I think that's exactly it. So sometimes the thoughts are just thoughts, and if we use an example, for example, walking down the stairs with baby, and the thought is, what if I drop baby and baby falls? If we can still continue walking down the stairs and accept that this was a thought, you know, that's really, really, really common, not that specific thought, but that experience. If then we sit down and are too fearful to then go down the stairs, or can't continue with those processes, then it sort of suggests that speaking to a therapist and getting some extra support would be a good idea, because then perhaps it's affecting your life and your functioning, and a little extra support would be beneficial. And maybe there is sort of something more to the thoughts, you know, maybe it is some perinatal anxiety or something like that, so that support would be beneficial. But even having the thoughts, even chatting now and hearing each other's thoughts, there's comfort in, oh shit, okay, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
And that's the dialogue. Yeah.
And even when I shared it on my Instagram, that specific like write up, and so many other people contacted me and they were like, yeah, that's me. Oh my word, I feel exactly the same way. And those thoughts are constantly popping into my head. So it was almost like, yeah, like almost a weight off my shoulders. Like, okay, like people are going through this. Let's talk about it. Let's chat about it. Like, but I do feel, Shaman, like postpartum and like, what do you call it? Prenatal, what do you call it? Yeah. Before you give birth?
Yeah, yeah.
Prenatal.
Prenatal, so antenatal.
You're over those stages of life. You've forgotten about it.
So, prepartum, what do you call it? Postpartum and
prepartum. Postpartum and prepartum and perinatal and shaman's taught, like, I'm a wealth of knowledge. I'm ready for kids.
What's the correct term?
Yeah,
so if you, but you can use a perinatal means pregnancy and postpartum, so it's that whole period, okay. And that's sort of
I meant just like just before you give birth. Let me just go that route. So before you give birth, there's so much information. You go for your antenatal classes. You go for all of the. You know where I'm going with this. You go for all these things. You get so much information about the birth and this and that and hana. And then you have the child, and then there's like no postpartum care. It almost feels like you just, there we go, here we go, after your birth, here's some Nurofen, great, have a nice day, see you later, use some lube. And, you know, like you just sent on your way with a new baby, and you're like, oh my fucking God, like this is hardcore. Like what next? And physically, no one gives you any advice in terms of like rehab and the physical kind of that aspect. And then mentally, there's no one there guiding you to be like, it's okay. These thoughts are totally normal. This is what you're going to go through. I think my sister-in-law was the first one who actually even said to me, Nicole, when your milk comes in, just warning you, you might hit a low. There's a lot of hormones in there. You might get super emotional. And I was like, thank you for telling me that because I had no idea. And then you've got like your boobs are literally about to explode. You're bleeding from every hole in your body. You just literally, you are so physically and mentally screwed. I don't know the right word for it, but you're just so overwhelmed and everything is happening all at the same time and your hormones and it's so wild and there's no one there to guide you or there's just no help and no one to be like, right, this is what you're going to experience. You might not get mastitis or prolapse and this and that and you might, you know, whatever, but at least they tell you and give you like that advice and that information. I feel like everything was so much leading up to the birth and this and that and, you know, the whole birthing experience. And to be honest, you don't know what's going to happen in your birthing experience. Like no one knows. So just go with the flow. And really, I feel like people need to focus on like postpartum care and what happens to you psychologically and physically.
Sorry. Like I said, it's just preparation for me one day.
I know, she's going to be like, easy game.
No, definitely. I don't think anything about motherhood or giving birth is easy game.
So you can take from that, you've got your Nurofen, you've got your lube, and you might have a prolapse and you're going to cry when your mom comes in.
Thankfully, I've got you. Specializes
thank goodness.
And has postpartum packages. So my support's waiting for me, I suppose. And then, so I know you did touch on, or basically saying that from, as a coping mechanism is also like sort of looking for that support or getting that support. How do you, Nix, how do you cope?
With
intrusive thoughts and parenting.
Oh, I know everything.
We've spoken about it before when we've gone to the park and the kids are running and the kids are, even when I'm with my nieces and they're like running and playing on the like jungle gym, my immediate thinking, like my whole body just like tightens up when they run. When I see kids run in the park on tar and And Enzo was running past and is a skateboarder, and like, I'm anxious just having a dog who's pretty anxious. I can't imagine what it's like having humans who you have to look after. Yeah. And then I suppose this is getting me to the, our next topic, is then having two kids, and not having, now you've sort of coping with the one child and your anxiety around managing and being a mother for the first time with one. Now you're transitioning into two or even more kids.
I think that, like, when you do transition into two kids, your focus when you have your first is so, like, you really into it. Like, it's your first child. It's so beautiful. It's so special. And all your focus and energy is in that, into that one child. So I feel like those intrusive thoughts were like a lot more than what it was when I had Hunter. I almost felt like I didn't have time to think of.
You're distracted.
I was so distracted, and there was just so much going on, and that anxiety that I felt with Isla, and all that, that feeling of being overwhelmed, and that, oh my God, don't do that. And I'm like, I've had to just let go and just be like, Nicole, it's out of your hands, like, just relax. And you can't, you actually don't have the energy.
So you're basically saying have two kids under the age of two.
Next is cure for intrusive thoughts, is pop out another baby and then you can't think about the thoughts.
And then when it comes up again, just have another child.
Yes, because then you don't got time to think of anything.
Maybe that is the cure.
Maybe that's it.
Oh, does that just mean you're going to have a third?
No. Please, whatever you
we've got a like thing going here. Like, Shaman and I were chatting, wondering if you'll have a third. Actually, Ash Football brought up. She's like, Nix will definitely, like, she's gonna have a lot, Lamiki.
Listen,
like you
will definitely. I would love to have 10 children if I could physically and financially have them. I would, and live in a beautiful farm with my horses and my 10 children, you, my horses. 10 nannies and night nurses.
I knew you were lying when you said horses. If you said dogs, I know that too.
No, guys, I seriously, no. I don't recommend having one kid right after the other. I think that was just, that was a big whoopsie on our part. But
it was the lube's fault.
Exactly. Blame it on the lube. And I also blame it on that mini pill. I mean, don't give someone a mini pill.
Although,
give them a full blow.
Although, you weren't taking the mini pill at the same time. And now, like, I don't know much.
Don't
but
bust me. She's when totally Nick, busting
I still remember the first time when Nick's fell pregnant with Isla, we were sitting, I can't even remember that health cafe, where we were sitting, and I got this beautiful box, and I opened up the box. So, pregnancy test, that was positive. And then baby number two, I arrived at her house, and I can't remember what it was, but we were just chatting, you were like, oh, by the way, yeah, I'm pregnant again. Oh. And Isla was 6 months old. I was like, what? Where's my gift? Where's the big announcement?
I think I might have been crying.
Yeah, I think it was a very emotional time. That's crazy. Like, 6 months old and being pregnant again. Like,
yeah, but I felt she was 4 months old when I was fell pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
I told her when she was 6 months.
Because you're in denial.
Yay! You're going to be a big sister. it's rough.
You're going to probably in 2 years' time, I rate, it's going to be much better, right? Hunter's going to be four.
I don't know, Shaman. Tell me. When am I out of the woods?
I don't know. When I get there, I'll let you know.
Your gap's also quite small, or two years?
Four, yeah, two and a half. So 4.5 and two.
Okay. But I feel like you're pretty much there. You kind of...
It does. Yeah, I think the
nappies.
Nearly. Little one's still in nappies.
Okay.
But I do think like that independence helps. And I, you know, everyone has a different experience in the newborn and the toddler stage. But I do think once there's that physical independence, it does feel a little, I wouldn't say easier, but it feels like you have more independence.
Yeah, definitely. When they start playing with each other and hanging out, and you don't have to constantly be there making sure that they're not falling or hurting themselves or eating a piece of glass.
Well, my 4.5-year-old broke her arm a couple of weeks ago. So, I mean, we're not thriving over here.
Oh, gosh. I feel like it never ends. It's just more. There's just more and different challenges as they get older. It's wild.
And so then what are the coping mechanisms, especially was it easier for you guys to sort of see that you need to prioritize yourself and your own mental health and do things for yourself with two kids or or one? Like, when you've got one kid, are you so invested in your new role as a mother and your newborn that you really neglect yourself, and then by the time child, like baby number two comes, you kind of go, gosh, like I really need to actually like focus on me a bit? Or is that still just something that's incredibly hard? Because I often hear moms saying that, just wanting me time or just wanting a break and all these things, but they never get that break or never get that, you know. A lot of moms, like, I find you as well, don't get a lot of time for you and you single parenting like 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah, I know, it is quite hardcore. I'm tired all the time when people ask me, how are you doing? I'm like, I'm tired. sorry, carry on. Go, Shaman, give us your wisdom.
Oh, I'm not sure it's wisdom. But no, I think it is one of those things that is incredibly difficult to prioritize self as mom. So difficult, and that difficult's an understatement. Are we allowed to swear on the podcast?
It's me. Yes. I try not to, because when my mom listens to it, she always tells me not to swear as much. Don't know if she's listening to this one, but you're more than welcome to express yourself.
Okay. Disclaimer. Sorry, Mama Logues.
Mama Logues.
It's fucking hard. It is. And I think anyone who is in it knows it's hard. And that's okay. It's okay to experience it as hard. But I do think prioritizing self is important. And not just, you know, I think that self-care and prioritizing self can have a bit of a bad rap, you know, a bubble bath and a face mask, and suddenly motherhood's easy. And that's just,
is it not? Know. Is that all it takes?
But, you know, taking it a bit deeper than that and making space to fulfill your needs, whether that's asking someone to help pick up the groceries, whether that's asking a partner, if you have a partner, to help out a friend, whether that's therapy, whether that's setting boundaries with people, loved ones, friends, family that you need to. So I think, yes, prioritizing self is essential. We can go full cliche with you can't fill a cup with an empty cup, that one. And I think, you know, that there is truth in that. But it's also sort of what we're modeling to our children. And I think that's one that I encourage others to be mindful of and definitely try for myself, is by me taking those moments to fill my cup, to do things for myself, I'm showing my children that that's okay.
Yeah.
So me saying to the kids, guys, mommy's going X, Y, and Z. Mom's going, you know, to do the thing that I need to do for me, shows them, oh, okay, we're allowed to put ourselves first. And we're also teaching an important lesson of vulnerability. Like, I'm not perfect, mom. I'm doing my best, and we're learning as we go. So when I need a break, I'm going to allow myself to have that break. And then they see, oh shit, mom's human. So when they need that space, when they need that discovery time, when they make those mistakes, when they need a breath, it's not considered abnormal or strange or failing. It's, oh, okay, this is normal. So I think that's another thing to sort of remind ourselves on. The self-care isn't the well, it might be if that's what you need. If you need the face mask and the bubble bath, go for it, embrace that. Yes. But it's more than that.
I think that's like been my hardest challenge, like to give myself that time and actually enjoy that time, because I feel guilty. Like, even though I am at home with the kids most of the time, like I'm constantly thinking, like today, well, ever since Isla went to school, I thought, you know what, in the morning now, I've got time to, I'm going to drop her off at school, I'm going to take the dog for a nice walk in the beach, and I'm going to go for a swim every day. That is my time, that me and the dog, like old times, I'm going to do that. And I'm going to enjoy that half an hour, 45 minutes every day, while Hunter's with a nanny, and I can actually just switch off and enjoy. And initially it was so hard. I kept on going, okay, I need to get back, I need to get home. And I was like, why do you need to? You don't need to. Just enjoy this time on the beach, enjoy your swim, and then get home and you'll feel recharged. So, but it took a while to get into it. And now I'm like, get in the car, we are going to school, I need to go for my swim. I'm like, I absolutely love it, but it did take me a long time to do that. But yeah, I mean, it's hard. I don't know, like for me, a bubble bath and a face mask is just like almost doesn't touch sides. It's like, whatever.
Because there's no alcohol involved.
yeah, exactly. It's just that, yeah, I think mom guilt is huge. And you know what I feel like I've learned is to actually just accept it and be like, you're going to feel it a lot. You're going to feel like you should be with the kids. And so if you just accept it and you embrace it, and you're going to be like, I know I should be, but that's cool. Like you'll always feel mom guilt. So that's what I kind of keep playing in my mind. Like, just accept it. It's normal. It's part of your everyday new mom life. So yeah.
Yeah, it's really a tough journey. And I think what makes it more tough, to go back to sort of that myth, is that we often feel the need to pretend we're not experiencing those things, that we don't find self-care difficult, or we don't need self-care. I mean, there's a sort of a belief or a myth that we, to be a good mom, we just give everything of ourselves. And then when we do take that time off, we're plagued with guilt. And the issue, I think, is a far bigger social construct issue, that isn't a good mom. A good mom isn't someone who gives all of herself and has nothing left. But I think so often that is the expectation that we have. And yeah, I think there's a fascinating workshop that Dr. Sophie Brock does, all on sort of the motherhood myth and looking at the role of mother and the process of mothering. And yeah, really fascinating, that touches on so much of this.
Nice.
So on a lighter note, because I feel it's very heavy, it's all very, really real. But also, of course, there's so many like amazing moments and special memories that you guys have both had so far. So with having two kids, or even when you had one, are there any like really ridiculous moments or funny moments that you've had? I know there are lots. But like with your kids and with two kids, like while one's doing this, Bentley's stealing croissants on the beach, you're trying to juggle this, you're full of baby vom. I love those stories.
Well, actually, I saw Phil sent me a video the other day of because we have cameras in the house, and it was when we were in our Flower Street house. Yes. And there's a camera that was in Isla's room, and she was a couple of months old, and I was quite heavily pregnant. No, so she was maybe like, say, 6 or 7 months old, and I had like a tummy, because in this video, it would pick up, it would film if there was motion in the room. So there I am, she was obviously sick and vomiting, and she was, and Phil's obviously away, so I'm there on my own. So I'm naked. I've got my bump is sticking out. She's on my hip vomiting, and I'm cleaning the floor as she's vomiting with my foot and the towel with my foot, and I'm just cleaning the vomit, and she's vomiting, and my tummy's there, and I'm trying to bend down. It was this clip. It was like probably 15 seconds. And I just looked at this and I was like, oh my God, this is what I was doing. 3 o'clock in the morning, heavily pregnant. I was nauseous as anything, vomiting myself. There Isla is vomiting and sick, and I'm cleaning this
and
with
Bentley's
my...
Bentley's probably trying to
Bentley's
get
Bentley's probably coming to eat the blooming vomit on the floor, and I'm cleaning it up with my foot, like hacking it out. And I looked at this whole situation. I was like, oh my God, this is mom life right here. Yeah. This is what we should be showing people. You know, if I wasn't naked, I might have put it on social media. But I was very, very naked and very pregnant, so I wasn't in looking my best.
No, I'm sure you still can look like a supermodel cleaning the floor with your feet with probably pedicure.
Oh, no, definitely not. So yeah, that was my little funny flipping moment. Shaman, do you have a good one?
We're all about at the moment exploring the questions that mom doesn't know how to answer. So this week we've had what's inside your bum hole? Ophelia wants to know, like, can we learn a bit more about what's inside your bum hole? And sometimes she goes a little deeper and not in her bum hole.
Deeper than the bum hole.
That's beautiful. I love that. I'm getting all red. How do you answer that?
Well, I suppose these are the moments that break you out of your cycle of intrusive thoughts. Like, this is what you need more of, is the raw, like, kids coming, geen skam.
Say it as it is.
Nothing is more humbling than being a mom. We've also had, if we die and then we're a skeleton, if we don't like being a skeleton, can we come back again?
Wow, that's deep.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, actually.
So these are the fun moments that I'm faced with at the moment. But it's wonderful. I would rather do the existential crises than vomiting and poo.
Yeah, that's true.
I know. I'm nearly there, Shaman. I'm nearly out of that.
So she's going to start asking you these sorts of questions soon. She's almost full.
It's coming.
Yeah. Although scared. She's already so bloody bright.
Yeah. No, she's on another planet, that one. I'm scared for when she's a teenager.
Amazing.
But I think if we may, around sort of how... you know, how to deal with that. And Nix, I think, you know, I admire your vulnerability and sharing how freaking hard it has been. I think with those intrusive thoughts, one of the things, and you said it yourself, that we can do is name it. So there's the saying that I love, name it to tame it. So once we've named it, it becomes a little less scary. Like we said in the beginning, that dark and, you know, dangerous word, it becomes, okay, I know what I'm experiencing. I understand what this is. It's still uncomfortable, but I know I can give it that name. It's an intrusive thought. And that's sort of one of the tips in tackling those and not rejecting it. So we're not saying like, oh, no, don't think it. It's there. You know, we've thought it. So instead of pretending we didn't think it, rather acknowledging this is scary. I'm feeling really uncomfortable by this thought, but that is what it is. It's just a thought and naming that. And I think the next thing is, you know, trusting that intuition and that sort of mama lion that's concerned about the safety of the kiddies and having a look around. Is there something scary? Is there something dangerous that I'm being alerted by? Is there something that I need to be mindful of? And once we've assessed, okay, we're actually safe, there's nothing going to happen, then we can continue. And I think the loss, and we did touch on it, is sharing about it. And I think the more we hold shame against intrusive thoughts, the less we're going to be talking about them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think social media also plays a huge role in it, because you just, this motherhood is all like portrayed to be, and I know, like, for sure, a lot of my stuff as well, I almost like take the piss out of motherhood. Like, I try to show the funny side of the craziness, but there's a lot of people that try and show like that's their perfect life,
beautifully curated,
and it's got all your wooden toys and perfectly positioned neutral tones and this, and you're like, come on, don't do that. You know, like, my house is filled with like colorful Chinese plastic toys. Like, it's just, you know, I'm sorry, but like, I never thought I'd be that mom with those. Ooh, but I am. I've learned to just let go and go with the flow. And I think the more that people go onto social media and think that that's what parenting and motherhood should look like, it's wrong. It's so wrong. And that's why with Wellness in the City, like, if we do any posts on, you know, infertility or sharing about like my experience, I like say to him, like, I want to show the Instagram versus reality. I want to show there's also those beautiful pictures that I did with a great photographer who made me look fabulous, but then there's the real life where I'm sitting and like lying on the bed with the baby on me, and there's piles of laundry behind me, and, you know, a horrible one of me pregnant, like in the maternity ward with those stuff, like, what are those? Disposable panties with a massive, yes, and the pad that's like a blooming surfboard. And I was like, I want to show people that, because that is what it looks like. It's raw and it's real and it's not pretty, you know? So we have done a lot of that, and it works. People respond to that. And I feel, yeah, I mean, there is a, yeah, they do.
Yeah, I think social media is a scary, we've often actually discussed it, especially in the parenting world, that like, it's a scary world out there on social media and what people portray it to be. Like, sometimes it feels, especially with like the younger generation, like us even, like becoming moms has become trendy. Like what you wear, there's now more like everything, there's more available, there's more like fashionable maternity wear, and everything's all like on social media so beautifully curated when it comes to parenting, that it actually looks fun to have a kid, because like, it's another person to add to your family photo, not just your dog. And
like, absolutely.
No, and all the cute, beautiful kids wear that you can dress them
in. It gives me anxiety thinking of having to do anything with the kids. Like, you know, we've been given a product for the kids to try out. I'm like, this is going to be a ball ache.
They are amazing.
But do you know the aftermath? There is ice cream everywhere and food and crap all over my room and linen and bed and just, yeah. It's just an absolute dog show. So I don't know how these momfluencers do it, because they have either got it waxed or they're lying.
I think, you know, it's exactly sort of, social media can be a really dangerous place in motherhood, with sort of curated stuff that feels far from reality for some. And I think it's also, you know, been a place for me personally, professionally, that connects so many moms. And I think, like, with Jess, for example, her writing is sort of, it speaks to a place that you feel but don't know how to put into words. I think a lot of it's, and I think that's sort of that prioritizing self and how to take care of yourself as a mom. I think that's one of the ways, sort of that boundary of what what am I going to receive? I'm feeling overwhelmed with baby and holding it together postpartum. It's hard. What am I going to receive? What extra stimulus am I going to allow to enter? And then choosing, you know, I don't want to look at the, you know, motherhood portrayals that seem perfect. I'm going to find a piece of writing that, you know, and picking and choosing and setting those boundaries to protect yourself, I think, is another self-care tool that we should all be or could all be using.
Yeah, that's actually what I started to do. I started to delete accounts that just made me anxious. And I was like, I don't actually want to see that. I don't want to see your picture perfect life. And everything is just so beautifully, you know, like you doing so many amazing things, but you've got like four kids and you content creating, doing this, doing that, moving, like interior designing, doing millions of things. And it was just too overwhelming for me, because then I was like, oh, I've only got two kids and why am I not doing that? Like, I would just delete, cull people. And yeah. And then I just literally would follow accounts that inspired me and that gave me energy and didn't put me down. So that's, I think, like one of the biggest pieces of advice if you don't want to get off social media, and either for business or because you whatever, but follow accounts that lift you up and motivate you.
Definitely. And I think also to end off as well, Sharman, if you can share with the listeners how they can, if there are any moms out there listening, how they can potentially work with you or how you can support them, if you can share a bit more about Mumwell to end off, that would be great.
Yeah, I think if, you know, Nick's described beautifully and in great detail her postpartum experience with the Lubin and Nurofen. And I think there's something, you know, we jest, but there's something very true and very real about the amount of support we get during pregnancy. How's baby? You know, gynae appointments each month. There's a lot of care, nurture, and support during the pregnancy, and then you have baby, and it feels like that ends. So I think one of the ways in which we can help prepare, and I don't like to use that word, you know, often, because it's such a difficult thing to prepare for. But one of the things that I think we can try and do is create a postpartum plan. So while we're pregnant already, having a look at what support might I find useful, whether that's a lactation consultant or a doula for birth, and then finding a therapist, counselor, psychologist, and reaching out while you're still pregnant. Hi, this is me. I'm pregnant. Right now I feel good, but I just want to reach out and connect to someone before birth, because we often see it's a lot easier to ask for help when we're feeling good than asking for help when we're in the thick of it. And if I take myself back even to when my daughter was born, she was in the NICU. It was crazy. It was emotional. I was fortunate enough to be in this industry where I did have a therapist, and I'm very grateful that I had that support. But had I not been in therapy before my daughter was born, I think I would have found that even more challenging to reach out. So I think a postpartum plan could be a useful tool in supporting after postpartum. So we have Nurofen, lube, and then maybe a few other professionals. to help.
Okay, I've got one last question.
Better be good.
Okay, if both of you could think back to your firstborn, and any support that you could have gotten at that stage, like anything, what would you have wanted? Like, but I'm thinking, because I'm just preparing, I'm manifesting for my future. And I'm thinking, if I have to go through this night nurse, private chef,
that's gonna be me. Yes. Is like, you know how many times I carry him around to your place and cooked you dinner?
I've not been thrown it in your face yet.
It's coming, I know.
If you could, if there's any, like, I don't know, I think this is something that I've always thought of because I'm so precious about my sleep and I know I'm gonna really struggle from sleep deprivation. I know I shouldn't put it out there, but I mean, like, it's a thing. You do not get proper night's sleep. So night nurse, I would say, is like high up on my like wish list. Should I be able to be in a situation that I could get it? Like, what would you number one or like two things be?
Chip, you brought out a hard one.
Oh, is it? I thought this was going to be like a no-brainer.
You know what? Okay, I did have a friend the other day who said to me that she felt pressurized to not have a night nurse because everyone in her antenatal group, they were like, no, we're doing it on our own. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, if you can afford to,
why not?
Do it.
Just for one night's sleep.
Jeez, exactly. If you can get someone in maybe once a week, how fantastic is that? You know, just to have one night. If you're not breastfeeding, I know it's hard if you're breastfeeding. Yeah. But I think for me, what I maybe would have liked is to have gone for like to like a physio, a pelvic floor physio, and worked on that. And also because everything was so out of alignment because of both births being so quick after one another and the pressure and everything that happened during my birth, it was not an easy birth, but my pelvis, my pubic bone, my back, everything was out. And I feel like I should have had, if I had someone like a physio to work on me after birth and just make sure that everything kind of went back into alignment, I think I wouldn't have had my back issues. And also I wouldn't have to cross my legs when I sneeze. Putting it out there.
That's a goodie. I didn't actually think about the physical. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to be, I think the support that I wish I had with my first would be sort of this is really hard. You're racking my brain. I think I was fortunate enough to have a lot of support, but the area that I think I needed more support is being able to delegate those tasks. So it's not an actual support person, but I think, and it really sort of brought it home to me when you said that some people sort of turn their noses up at night nurses. And I just think so often we feel as though we have to do it all on our own. And I definitely, with retrospect, think I tried to do that more with the firstborn than the second. And I think I had a lot of personal realizations through sort of experience, through therapy, that I was more willing and more eager and more compassionate to ask for help the second time around. Whereas the first time, I think I just tried to do it all. So I think the first time I would have probably had more grace with myself to ask for, and not necessarily for the emotional support, because I think I had that, but you know, can you help me with cooking dinner? Can you help me with doing laundry? Can you help me clean the house? All of those things that I felt I had to do, that I didn't actually have to do now thinking about it, but the grace to say, like, shit, I can't do this. Can you do it?
And, you know, also another friend said to me who had two, one after the other and actually planned it. Who does that? Anyway, she said to me, the best advice I can give you is invest in help. And she's like, we are so fortunate in this country that we can actually, we have the help at our disposal. We can get a nanny, we can get a night nurse, we can get a cleaning lady. We can, if you invest that money that you might think, you know, oh, you'll buy a fancy breast pump or you'll buy a
country road outfit.
Or country road outfits for the kids. No, put that into someone's salary and get them to help around the house, because it does give you that little bit of like, oh, okay, I don't have to do that. And just every little task when you have a child is monumental. It's like, oh my goodness. So when you put them down to sleep and you know you've got like 45 minutes and there you are, instead of going to brush your teeth and showering, you like hanging out the laundry and, you know, washing dishes and bottles. I can't. You know what I've just discovered is that I put the bottles now into the dishwasher and I was washing and sterilizing them the whole time. I'm like, what was I doing to myself? I can just put them in the dishwasher. And I was there, I was like hucking out, cleaning the whole thing. So I don't know if you do that, but I didn't do that.
You've touched on something that I think is really important. This is like the never ending party. Sorry. but I think there's such an important differentiation to make between housewife and mom. And to be a good mom doesn't mean to have the house together. And I think so often we put the two in the same bracket. So being a good mom means nutritious, organic, fully cooked meal every day, clean house, sparkling countertops, laundry folded, bottles sterilized. And then we sort of give ourselves credit. Okay, I mommed well. And the two are so different, right? So you being a mom, me being a mom is a very different role to the sort of house chores.
Yeah. And like, I feel like the more messy the house is and like out of like just everything's lying around, the more I've spent time with the kids, the more the house is clean, looking great, the more the kids are sitting in front of the TV. You know what I mean? So you've got to kind of weigh it up and be like, right, you're not going to get all of it done, but do I want to spend time with the kids today? It was so beautiful this morning. The sun was out. I was like, I'm not going to sit and do stuff. Like, the kids are home. Let's do cool things together. Like, let's get them in the pool. Let's play with them. We're going to have ice creams at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's cool. You know, there was ice cream everywhere. And I was like, oh, cool. I've got to get ready for this podcast. Bye. But, you know, like, I had my time with them. It was cool. It was messy. But, you know, I've had to let go because I'm so pedantic and I'm such a perfectionist and I hate mess. And I have to let go. I mean, my mom comes around and even she is like even more OCD than me. And she says to me, Nicole, how can you let your kids eat like this? There is food everywhere. And then you take them out of their chair and they're running around and they've got their hands on the couch. This is terrible. You are not doing a very good job. She cucks me out and I'm like...
Yeah, but you've got that vacuum cleaner.
I do. I've got the best vacuum cleaner. But I literally am like, Ma, sorry, but that's the way it's going to be. Like, I don't even have time to fight with you on this one. So you clean them. And then my mom's running around with wet wipes, cleaning. I'm like, I can't. I'm done. But I think it's because when you're with them and every single day and every second and every hour, you just have to let go. There's...
Let it go.
You sing Frozen.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, thanks so much, guys. I know we can go on for hours, and we'll definitely do another podcast episode soon because I know there's a lot of topics that we're wanting to cover. But I really appreciate both of you guys taking time out of your day to join me today and to essentially help me in my training for the future. Selfishly, if no one else downloads this podcast, at least you've changed my life.
Good to know.
Thanks for that. I needed that from you. I'm glad.
It was amazing. But we'll do this again soon.
Thank you so much. That was awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Sharman. That was amazing.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye. Have a good day.